I remember seeing this Peanuts, you know, the Peanuts character, the cartoon character. Do any of you remember those cartoons? But anyway, I can't remember the girl, what was her name? Lucy says to Charlie Brown, "You know, Charlie Brown, the problem with you is," and she lists a whole lot of things. And he says, "Yeah," but he said, "What can I do about it?" She says, "My job is only to point out the problem." And there's a little of me tempted to say, I'm much better at pointing out the problem than, I hope I'm not just pointing out the problem, but the solutions to some of what you've mentioned here, and they're very real issues, from Father Charlie talking about going back and not sensing this enthusiasm, to the question about how do we convince others, how do we particularly engage young people, and particularly the word indifference was used. Okay, well, let's first of all say a few things. First thing I want to say is I believe that all we need to renew the church in our place and time is given to us by God. God is not withholding God's gifts from us. That's the first thing. I really believe God is with us, is with you and your diocese, is present among us, prompting us, leading us, and enabling us. That's the first thing. And that's maybe more an act of faith than anything I can particularly point to, but I believe it with all my heart. The second thing is that the talents and the gifts are here among us to reach young people, to reach the indifferent, to engage with them. Here we see, for example, a family who's present with us, even though, you know, if this was a group of younger people, I would be using a different maybe approach or different kind of language and so on. But I believe that the gifts are there. What we need is courage, we need imagination, we need trust, we need to be empowered and enabled. Let me just very briefly, it's years since I was there, but outside of Brussels, there's a parish called Krynem, K-R-I-N-E-M. It's the K-R-A-I-N-E-M. It's the English language parish for Flanders in Belgium. And a typical Sunday morning there is that people start arriving from about 8:30. And people just disappear. It's a big complex into different rooms and so on. There's catechesis for young people going on, depending on their age and where they're at. There's a place where you can go and get coffee and croissants. And then about 10 o'clock, I think, I'm reminding the details of this right, but about 10 o'clock, there's a short mass. Not a big deal, ordinary celebration of mass. Done well, but it's nothing particularly elaborate. 12 noon, there's a mass, and all hell breaks loose. Because the kids who have been preparing and reflecting on the word of God beforehand have been drawing things and so on. They'll bring them up in the procession and the priest will go into the microphone. He'll talk to them. He'll engage them. There's a Filipino choir that have wonderful things prepared. And the liturgy could go on for a couple of hours. Now, that's not for everybody. They can go to the early mass if they don't want it. And afterwards, there's a cup of tea and coffee. And there's a real sense of community. Now, I mean, I'm not in a parish. I've never been full-time in a parish in Ireland. I usually park my car facing outwards when I give talks like this in case I'm run out of town. But can we imagine for a moment that we're not tyrannized by saying everybody has to be in and out in 25 minutes? You know, I'm not convinced that if we did liturgy in such a way that people really felt involved, enjoyed, enlivened, and properly prepared for, because you can't do everything in the Mass, and you shouldn't try to do everything in the Mass, that wouldn't interest some, if not many people, in fact. And I know there are many problems with all of that and so on. But I'm just giving an example of, I think there's an awful lot we can and could and should be doing. And I think liturgy done well would be a great place. I love choirs, but I'm appalled when I go to Mass and the choir does everything and the congregation never joins in. The best choirs in the world at the most finest liturgies, including the ordinations of bishops, if I may say so, and there's nobody leading the congregation in singing. I feel robbed when that happens. Now, these are small things, but I think they all make a difference. So in terms of the indifferent, I'm teaching in a university setting, and for all the talk about Catholic education, Catholic colleges and everything else, students are students. I find many of them are indifferent. I find an awful lot of them are not. And in fact, are much more open than I would expect if we can properly engage with them and speak to them. We have to believe ourselves that there is something compelling about the gospel, that this is good news. And if we don't believe that ourselves, it's not going to communicate itself to anybody. You know, and that's really what Pope Francis is saying. Actually, it begins with ourselves. you know? And that's why I never look around the room and say, well, who's not here today? I say, look at who's here. Isn't it great? You know, it begins with us. And that this is really something that's the heart of our own lives. For Pope Francis, a key word is encounter. And I think so easily we can cut ourselves off from encounter. I find it hard. I'm not, you mightn't believe this. I'm about 50%, on those personality things, I'm 50% introvert, 50% extrovert. I enjoy my own company. And I find going into a space where I don't know people and so on, I find it actually can be challenging enough. But Pope Francis is saying to us, engage in the encounter, not just settle for associating ourselves in self-selected groups, which are actually sects, S-E-C-T-S, rather than communities. A community is where you meet people you might normally meet, and you have to shake hands with somebody you might normally shake hands with, and you engage with people you wouldn't normally engage with. And one of the things we've been very bad at in Ireland is actually talking about our faith. We'll talk about almost anything else. I joke in the college about students, you know, who are, if they're asked what subjects they're taking, I'm doing French, German, and theology. The word theology gets blurred, you know. And I say, no, talk about it. Actually, they've become much more open about it. They don't see it as something that's particularly odd. Again, key to encounter for Pope Francis is listening. You begin with a disposition of openness to the other person, and that was the point being made there. You begin by listening. The identifying characteristic will be their openness and their ability to listen. In terms of the multicultural, multi-ethnic nature of Irish society, how do we evangelize taking that into account? We're extraordinarily well placed. The church has been reflecting on interreligious dialogue and on intercultural relations probably long before anybody else. The place that most inclusion and most welcome is experienced by people of other ethnic cultures and religions in this country is in the Catholic educational system in our national schools. The people on the front line of welcoming people of other cultural contexts and ethnic dispositions are actually our own teachers in our schools. They're doing it kind of quite naturally, really. That has been shown. That's quite evident. But in terms of our engagement with them, we certainly should be engaged with them, and particularly with the evangelical churches, because they're new churches in a sense. I mean, the numbers of the Church of Ireland have probably quite declined, but the members of the new churches, like the various kinds of evangelical churches, as they call themselves, gospel churches and so on, they're actually quite much on the increase, and we should be engaging with them. And we've absolutely nothing to fear by doing that if we're coming from a place of confidence in regard to our own faith. In fact, that's really the key thing. And the people who are most likely to be inclusive of other religious dispositions are those who are most confident in their own. That's a proven fact. The more at home you are in your own faith, the more you understand your own faith, the more you appreciate your own faith, the more you can appreciate somebody else's. And I think Pope Francis is on the record as saying that what for him, our efforts in engaging, for example, with somebody of the Muslim faith is to help them to be a better Muslim. In the first instance, at least, to grow in their own relationship with God, in their own particular religion, and in their own faith. So I think we're very well equipped to do that, but provided we actually are fully understanding and engage with and confident in our own faith. I think that's where we come at from that point of view. On the issue of gay marriage, again, just to say what Pope Francis, while he's clearly, he has been very clear to, in his own cultural context, when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires, he was quite strong in opposing the introduction of marriage for same-sex unions on the same basis as marriage as we've understood it. He was quite strong in opposing that in his own cultural context. And in terms of how he has actually said in Evangelii Gaudium, he wants to see bishops' conferences in their particular own contexts deciding what is the best approach in their own particular church situations. Not just on that issue. So Pope Francis really is calling on churches in their own context to show the kind of leadership they think is most likely to be the best and the most effective. I think what he would also be saying to us from Evangelii Gaudium is speak in the first instance about what is beautiful about marriage between a man and a woman, and what is sacred about marriage, and what is positive about marriage, and that is the context in which children obviously are best raised and best supported. And so he talk about being positive about, if you like, a heterosexual marriage, ordinary marriage as we understand it. Speak about that. And then maybe at least pose the question, maybe more than pose it, and say, look, isn't this so core to our society that it needs a special name? It needs to be protected in a special way. It's not to take away or in any way diminish the rights of others, but there's something about marriage as we've had it down through the centuries, that and it's so special and so sacred and so core to what we're about as a people, that a special name and a special status needs to be reserved for that. So I think he'd be saying, come from the positive about this and how special it is. It's not taking away, it's not diminishing anybody else, but saying there's something about this. I think we also can be, and I've written about this in the Tuam Diocesan magazine, a short piece, and I won't remember it exactly now, but I did research it at the time. We'd be the first country, I think, to actually bring in this by a change in our constitution if we do it. Where gay marriage has been introduced so far, and it's only in a limited number of countries, in fact, it has been by a parliament, a vote of parliament. We'd be actually the first country ever to do it by constitutional reform, by a referendum, by a popular referendum. So where that took place already, a popular referendum, which was in Croatia, it was actually rejected. So just to think there's a huge consensus on this and that we're all moving in a particular direction and we're, as you say, bog people or bog politicians to resist it would not be true, and we shouldn't be allow ourselves to be disenfranchised from what can be quite sophisticated and mature position where you say, by all means, we are as supportive as we possibly can of people in various life situations, but there's something special about marriage as we've always understood it, that it deserves a special name and a special recognition. That's my own view, and I think it also possibly is Pope Francis's, but I went a little bit beyond Pope Francis and what I said there, and it's important to distinguish the two. And by the way, this is not something we need to agree on today, so don't all come rushing in now to contradict me if you feel that way, because we don't actually have to agree on it, all right, because it's not on the agenda. So let's not be deflected into that from our core business this morning, which is understanding better where Pope Francis is leading us. But I didn't want to dodge the bullet either. All right, so let me just, because we don't have much time left, we've only about 15 minutes of my time with you this morning left. I want to give you the structure of Evangelii Gaudium. And Justin very kindly mentioned a short book that I wrote with the Irish Catholic on Pope Francis' apostolic exhortation. And I think there are some copies available today here. Actually, we do address the gay marriage issue at the very end of the book. But it kind of is an introduction to the joy of the gospel. And this is now just my shorthand version of a particular way of understanding Evangelii Gaudium that might just help. When I first looked at this, when this first came out and I attended to it, was in the autumn into the spring. And I took the image of a hyacinth bulb because I love flowers and I love plants. And I took a hyacinth, and that's a photograph I made up myself from a hyacinth along with a copy of Evangelii Gaudium. And in any flower or any bulb, there are four parts to it. You've got the roots down here. You've got the bulb. You've got the green shoots. And you've got the flower. Okay? So you have roots, bulb, shoots, and flower as four parts. And could I just suggest to you that one way we can understand what's going on in the joy of the gospel in Pope Francis's encyclical or exhortation is to look at it in these four ways. So the roots for him are to be rooted and nourished in the soil of God's unconditional mercy, compassion, and love manifest in Jesus Christ. They are the roots. Roots nourished in the soil of God's unconditional mercy, compassion, and love. I've talked about this already, but they're the roots. And obviously the roots are nourished. If the roots dry up, the whole plant suffers. The bulb is kind of the energy center of a plant. It's where the life is there. Even a bulb that's, you know, I came across two hyacinth bulbs that my dog had dug up during the summer there, and they're still if I plant them again, I believe they're actually going to grow because there's little bits of green still inside them. The shoots are there, but the bulb is the energy center. For Pope Francis, I suggest to you that the energy is spiritual, personal, and pastoral, and for those who are in leadership, ministerial conversion. To convert is to turn our hearts, somehow to turn our hearts, to turn back. Maybe we can see it in this way, is turning to allow Christ to gaze upon us with mercy. Convertere, to turn towards Christ again, so we encounter this gaze. So this conversion that's personal, as I said, my very last slide before we broke was, if this isn't going on in us, if this change and transformation, that the most challenging thing is to allow it to happen in us. And even in answering your questions, I said that maybe, again, we work with ourselves. Of course, we, again, to take up Pope Francis, it's by going out to others that we come to ourselves as well. But I'm just saying, let's realize we ourselves need to allow ourselves to be touched by this. Personal, spiritual, to grow in our understanding of God. It's quite true and probable that many of us in this room were brought up with a different spirituality. Would some of us say the spirituality we got in school, or maybe we heard in sermons, or in the confessional was, do these things and God will love you. Or don't do these things or God won't love you. It's the other way around. Indeed, Pope Francis says that. He says, often it's been the other way around. He said that in the excerpt I showed you. But in fact, it's God loves you. Now, what are you going to do about it? Who do you want to be? So the spiritual conversion that maybe we're called to. Pastoral and ministerial is where we start looking at these questions, these tough questions you threw out there this morning. How do we deal with the indifference? How do we engage with young people? How do we deal with the multi-ethnic cultural context? We engage with these questions, and I repeat what I said a few moments ago. I believe the guidance under your bishop, the energy, the focus, the gifts, the talents, the resources, the key resources are all in this room for the renewal that's needed. And indeed, the many people who aren't here that would be reached and touched and could be involved. Because the Spirit gives us what we need to allow this to happen. So this process of conversion, this process of renewal. The shoots, I'm suggesting, and this is, you know, just the way I'm doing it, are evangelization and catechesis. And one of the questions, I hadn't forgotten it, I was asked, what do I mean by evangelization? How would you define evangelization? Well, I think it's helpful maybe just to distinguish between evangelization and catechesis. I think evangelization, first and foremost, again, to remind ourselves of what was on an earlier slide, which I said was the continuity right down through since Vatican II, is encounter with Christ, personal encounter with Christ. In the first instance, it's about enabling people to encounter the living God. I know people in whose presence I really feel in a very special way that I'm meeting the risen Lord. I know that this is the ground upon which they stand in their own lives, and it challenges me, it reassures me, it invites me, it accompanies me. And it's to become that kind of person ourselves is the first task of the evangelizer, that in meeting us, others meet Christ. The rule of Saint Benedict, if you go to a Benedictine monastery like Glenstall, every guest is to be welcomed as Christ, to see the other person as another Christ. So I would say that's first and foremost what evangelization is about. Do we need any more detailed definitions? Probably not. In Evangelii Nuntiandi, the document of 1975 of Paul VI, he says, I'm not going to waste time trying to define evangelization. We could spend all day on it. There's a paragraph which he says, it resists definition. So I think, for me, I would just focus on that idea that's first and foremost about a personal encounter with Christ. And it's Christ is encountered through persons, certainly through the sacramental life of the church, of course, as well. And that's hugely important. But bringing the sacraments alive by the way we celebrate them, how we live them, how we live out of them ourselves. Catechesis is more where the instruction is beginning, where people are being invited to look at the implications of being a disciple. And and in the sense that are benefiting from the treasury of the church's story of 2,000 years of understanding how to live the gospel and live out of the gospel. So the green shoots coming out of this conversion, this missionary option that we're being asked to take by Pope Francis, is renewed energy at evangelization and catechesis. And by the way, can I say, there are lots of good programs out there. You know, we see them, I mean, in Tuam, for example, at the moment, I know they're running a program for the neo-catechumenate. It's running in Limerick. There are various kinds of alpha programs and so on. And they can all be very good, or maybe not so good. I think we shouldn't be afraid within a local church, and particularly Diocese of Elphin that has such wonderful pastoral workers and so on, to devise the programs that best meet the needs of your own particular church. Sometimes the programs we buy in from elsewhere don't quite fit our own cultural context. But anyway, the work of evangelization, the work of catechesis goes on. They're the shoots. And what is the flower? The flower is the experience of joy. And that joy is to be distinguished from pleasure. Pope Francis does this in Evangelii Gaudium. He says it's not just pleasure. We can have all sorts of pleasurable experiences, but joy is something deeper. Joy is what you experience when you see for the first time your newborn child or grandchild. Joy is what you experience maybe when you experience being loved in a way you've never experienced it before. Joy is something that roots you to the spot. Joy is something much deeper than simply a moment of pleasure or happiness. Again, Pope Francis defines or talks a lot about joy, as does the Aparecida document of 2007. So these seem to me to be the four moments, if you like, in Evangelii Gaudium. Now, I had other slides there that give various excerpts, if you like, from Evangelii Gaudium, but I really don't think there's any point in me delaying on those. We might just cut, Dermot's working the other slide show, might just cut there to slide number 30, if we can. If you just follow me here, I'll get to it. These slides, by the way, if they're of any use to anyone, Justin already has them, and he can make them available to people. So don't be too worried. There may be some stuff on your notes that are taken from these slides I'm passing through now, and that's all right. This is far too detailed for this morning. You can explore them again. Maybe just this one. If we stop on this one, it says, go forth from your comfort zone. If you can stop on that one. So this is the flavor, giving you just a flavor. It says, go forth from your comfort zone. So where do you feel comfortable as a Catholic? Wow. Obviously, you felt uncomfortable enough to get up out of bed this morning. And comfortable enough to come here. So, you know, but where is our comfort zone? Are we comfortable to talk about faith? Father Charlie said there that all this talk of love is grand, but what do we do out of it? Do you remember, it's okay in this age group, it's useless with my students, but I talk about the musical My Fair Lady. Do you remember My Fair Lady? Do you remember Eliza Doolittle's, she shouts at Professor Higgins at some stage. What does she shout at him? Don't talk about love, show me. Show me. You know, and so go from our comfort zones to show people. Get involved in people's lives by word and deed. Phrases used again and again, take on the smell of the sheep. Now, he's saying that to pastors, to ministers. Mind you, I've heard a few people saying, I don't like to be called a smelly sheep. undergo this pastoral and missionary conversion. Let us be permanently in a state of mission. This is the emergency situation we're in. Become good listeners. I mentioned that there a moment ago as key to evangelization. Each of us, according to our own unique gifts and in humility, like Mary, the last part of Evangelii Gaudium refers to Our Lady, bring forth Christ. Each of us, in our own way, be young, be old, be healthy, be ill, be gifted in certain ways and not in others, be on the edges of the church, perhaps on the peripheries or at the heart of the church, we bring forth Christ in our own way. So he talks about each particular church, and this would be a particular church, Elphin. I encourage each particular church to undertake a resolute process of discernment, purification, and reform. Have an ever-watchful scrutiny of the signs of the times. That's a phrase from Vatican II, reading the signs of the times. So this kind of an exercise, in a way, is a reading of the signs of the times. what are the issues? And he talks about the need for decentralization. In other words, you know, there's kind of a bit of a paradox of Pope Francis. Along with Pope John Paul, perhaps we've never had a pope whose personality has intrigued us so much. And, you know, who definitely people at all levels talk about what's called the Francis effect, that there's a renewed interest in the church because of Pope Francis. And yet at the same time, he's telling us, actually, I want to decentralize. I don't want everybody to be looking to Rome. I don't want everybody to be, you know, looking. I want local churches to take responsibility themselves. So we're kind of this kind of a paradox of him being very directive about wanting to be non-directive. You know, it's kind of strange. He's, you know, he very much the emphasis on the poor. And, you know, he's quite directive. He uses this language. He says, thou shalt not. We need to say thou shalt not to an economy, an economic system that excludes people or treats them unequally, or to a globalization of indifference. He's not just talking about indifference to faith there, but he's talking about indifference to human misery, the indifference to the human misery situations in which people find themselves. Indifference to the elderly, and so on. Listen to the young, listen to the elderly, particularly to women. There are two key paragraphs on that. Pope Francis is very respectful of popular devotion and popular piety, again, reflecting perhaps his own context in Argentina and Latin America generally. He talks about the importance of the homily and so on. Attend to the social dimension of evangelization and particularly opt for those who are society's discards. And he uses that word. I think it's a very strong word. He says, our brothers and sisters, and this is a lovely phrase, are the prolongation of the incarnation for each one of us. So the least among us, the most suffering among us, are other Christs. They are the incarnation. That is where God is to be found. In a particular way, God is to be found among the discarded, be that discarded materially poor, spiritually poor, morally poor, whatever way people are discarded. So basically, each of these statements is simply saying we take responsibility in our local church. We'll stop there. Let me just check in with you very quickly with a couple of moments for any comment or question, and then I'm drawing this part of the day to a close. So let's just stop for a moment, see if there any comment or question again.